At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 95 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host, John Shipley. John, you're looking a little red in a good way.
Yeah?
Yeah, you've been touching grass?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, some yard. Some yard work, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Married life, huh?
Yeah, I'm washed. I'm completely washed.
Well, that's good to see. I feel like, I don't know, I was pretty sick of the draft cycle starting about 2 weeks ago, just like the start of the month. Yeah. I was like, all right, yeah. I've been in the weeds too deep. I just want to get it over with at this point.
My counter, imagine you were covering the Washington Commanders and you were having to do all this coverage on Top Golf and Jane Daniels and Adam Schefter, like basically like emptied his clip, you know, earlier today. So more or less, Jane Daniels is perfectly cool not playing there, etc. It's definitely been a draft cycle though. Every draft cycle feels the same to me now. Like by the time there's a week to go, it's just brutal. They didn't even move the draft up. It doesn't need to be at the end of April.
Absolutely.
Make it mid April. You know, maybe early April. It doesn't need to be at the end.
Well, they should make the draft before free agency so that teams can, like, truly draft for value and then, like, fill needs later in free agency. But
I don't know if I like that.
You don't know about that one?
I don't know if I like that.
I feel like they just do it the opposite way to, like, spread out the calendar and make it.
I don't know. Would that kind of screw veterans, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah? Anti-union Gus?
Come on. <Yeah. laughs> What? 60 seconds in.
This sounds very much anti-CBS. Yeah.
No. I mean, maybe it would be a little bit worse for the veterans, but I feel like it would be like the draft outcomes would be better because then teams aren't drafting for need, which is a good segue into maybe the first observation we could take from Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson's joint press conference yesterday. It was on Thursday, a week before the draft. The annual pre-draft luncheon. I was not there, but John was there. And the very first two questions were kind of about drafting for need, essentially. Even though the words need and value weren't used, it was a good job by Demetrius, I thought. It was basically like, how do you have to weigh drafting guys who can contribute right away versus guys who will maybe contribute a few years down the road instead? And so Baalke, which is very similar to his responses last year on the same topic, said that like you can draft need over value if the two prospects are like closely aligned in grades and then the fit with the team in terms of scheme and culture and yada, yada, yada. And so he was saying like, I mean, he clarified later and said, obviously, if there's a 2-round difference, then like you're going to draft the better player and not the bigger need. But if you're just splitting hairs between which players better, then you go with the position of need. And so I don't know, I wasn't really surprised by that response just because, again, he said it last year and like it's kind of reflective in their recent drafts, not just last year, but I feel like that was just like something we definitely had to bring up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always thought, you know, attending these pre-draft pressers that they're normally pretty forthcoming. I remember walking out of the 2022 one thinking, oh, wow, Trayvon Walker is going to be the number one pick, you know, because I know then, you know, that was really felt like up in the air until maybe a few days before the draft. But that, you know, about a week, maybe 2 weeks before, just, you know, their comments, the way, you know, they answer questions made me feel that way. And so I normally think that they're, you know, they're not going to reveal their cards or anything like that, but they'll at least be, you know, some aspects of honesty.
Yeah.
I think like on the needs topic, it's kind of obvious, right? Like everybody loves to say take best player available, and every GM in the world says they take the best player available, but are they really? Is there any team in the NFL that does that, that isn't just taking a player? I mean, maybe the Eagles now and then. Is there any world where Marvin Harrison and J.J. McCarthy would be within 30 picks of each other?
That's what I was about to say. Like, J.J. McCarthy is about to be a top five. I mean, top half of the first round pick. And
so, if Bo Nix or Michael Penix go in the first round, you know, I mean, if –
that would be so crazy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're quarterbacks, but it's just kind of like the theme of a larger point that every team drafts, you know, for need. I mean, Marvin Harrison would be like the second overall pick if teams weren't, you know, if teams are only drafting best player available. Best player available is such a, like, fallacy to me and such like a, I don't know, it's just copium for GMs, I think. Yeah. They kind of like justify their decisions, you know, and if they make one the fan base or media doesn't agree with, well, who's best player available? What are you going to do? But I mean, even going back to last year, I know people probably didn't identify tight end and running back as their top needs, but if you go back to last year, in their eyes, other than finding a right tackle to replace Jawan, what did it seem like they thought their major needs were entering the offseason? Did it seem like they thought they had any?
I think their need was like getting a power run game. And so they thought that both Tank and Brenton Strange
exactly
help fix that. And then they combined 200 snaps.
Yeah, I'm not going to be convinced those were best player available picks. They were best player available at a position of need, you know? So, and that to me kind of like what he said, and maybe I'll look like an idiot. Maybe they take receiver in the first round. I keep thinking I'm not going to, and then the more and more conversations I have, it's more and more maybe, you know, it seems like an actual possibility. But I just think cornerback is such a more obvious need than wide receiver that if you're talking about, you know, need versus, you know, best player available, it seems obvious to me if they had a corner anywhere close to receiver, they would take a corner, right?
Yeah, I'm totally expecting a corner. I think the only world in which it's not a cornerback that's the first round pick for the Jaguars is a world in which they trade. But like, even if they do trade, like, I think that was another takeaway from yesterday, is that it seems less likely that there'll be a trade into the top 10 and more likely that it would be just moving up a couple of spots to like get their guy. But like, I still feel like there's a more likely chance they're just like trying to get their guy at corner than like even thinking there's a chance that Romo Dunze or Malik Nabers falls outside the top 12.
That's my thing. Like, I'm sure they would love to pick one of the big three receivers. Like, I'm sure they would love for that to be a reality. But,
yeah,
I mean, unless one of them falls, which makes sense. You know, does this seem like a front office that would want to deal like a future first, which is probably what you need to do to move into like the top 6, 7, or 8? No, it really doesn't. But I could see them making that move like 5 or 6, you know, spots up. It was interesting. He specifically mentioned 12 and 13. I don't think he was doing it for like a specific player or even like identifying, you know, the Broncos and, you know, Raiders and also, you know, throw the Saints in there. I don't even think he was doing that. I think it was like him saying that they won't know who like their pool of guys to think about selecting, who will be until the first dozen or so picks are off the board. You know what I mean? Like, like until it's like 5 picks before them and they can narrow it down to 5 guys and say, we're going to take one of these guys. I think that's what he was saying more so than him saying, oh, we're looking at potentially trading with Denver and maybe moving up for a cornerback or something like that. That was more so my impression, but I know a lot of people ran with that.
No, you're totally right. I was just more so saying that like the point that if there is a trade up, it's going to be like the 12 picks instead of like 8 or 9. But I'm with you. Like, I don't necessarily think even that means a trade up. It's more so just like that's the spot in the draft when they're gonna like actually start to realize like the players they might be able to take.
I regret tweeting the analytics comment.
Why?
Yeah. It got like 30 pro retweets because like maybe I didn't put it in the proper context, but it was like half the people were like he's right, and half the people were like, oh, he's making fun of any analytics people because he said the analytics people. I got the impression he was agreeing with them, and
yeah, totally.
The context of the answer was he was like, if you trade up, it better be worth it, you know. And when you talk to when you talk to analytics people, which I think is a pretty normal response, you know, they say normally don't trade up, you know, and they do. Yeah. And quarterback. He's traded up, I think, 3 times in his career with the Jaguars. And from everything I know, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say he's Andrew Berry or Kwesi or anything like that. You know, he's not like an analytics-based GM. Because at the end of the day, he still makes his own decisions. But from everything I know in here, he doesn't, like, turn his nose up and, like says, nerd, get back, you know, like, to the IT room and stuff. You know, he at least takes the information in and is willing to listen to it and implement it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I definitely could see him seeing that as trading up. It better be for a very specific guy. And you look at some of his past in Jacksonville, his trade-ups. He traded up for Jordan Smith in 2021. That felt like an Urban pick, but still, you know, that was obviously, you know, a whiff. Traded up for Devin Lloyd in the select in the first round. Not, you know, anything poking holes in Lloyd's game, but if you just, like, probably, like, look at the data and the pure, like, surplus value, probably better off just holding on to your fourth round pick and the first pick of the second round as opposed to, you know, moving up for a linebacker. And then Snoop Connor. Two of those were late, or not late, but, you know, mid,
early
day three picks. Day three picks. So only one was even in the top 100. And that one seemed like one of the more, I wouldn't say panic move, but one of the more forced moves of their regime. Because if you remember leading up to that, every like rumor mill was saying they wanted Walker and Walker, Trayvon Walker and Quay Walker.
Quay Walker
went off the board fairly early, you know, somewhere in the early 20s. It felt like they felt like they had to make a move to secure an inside linebacker. And so to me, that pick even felt a little bit out of his DNA, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think that pick definitely, it was a trade that happened like just on the moment because Quay was picked earlier than they expected. And so that goes with what he was saying yesterday where he's like, I don't understand the point of making a trade before the draft because you don't have assurance that the player that you want is going to be there unless it's for the number one pick, obviously. So.
Yeah. I mean, and that to me, like, says, like, if he trades up for a guy, it has to be somebody super specific. I'm thinking, like, obviously one of the big three receivers or – one of the top two cornerbacks, right? And I guess that brings me to my next interesting thing that he said about the cornerback group. He basically said how he thinks it's a good cornerback group throughout the class. If you pull 32 teams, you might get 32 different top tens. Is that saying to you that he doesn't think like there's much of a difference between the top corners in the draft? Which obviously, you know, would impact whatever, you know, they would do potentially at 17 because – I mean, why trade up if you don't think there's a big difference between Kool-Aid McKinstry and Kenyon Mitchell?
Yeah, I see how you can take it that way. I thought it was just kind of gibberish, honestly, and it was just like a non-answer. But I could bet, even if that's not even if he didn't mean to hint at that, I think that's like a fair way to take it because I think it's true. Or like, I don't know.
That was like
different top 10 rankings across every team, which like sounds pretty obvious, but it would be like, there would be a bigger disparity for the cornerback position than like probably any other position.
Should my arms hurt? Was that a Catherine Ricci? Okay. Well, at the end of the day, did you walk away less convinced that they would trade up in general? And if they did trade up, who do you think it would be? Whether it's somebody specifically or like a position group? Because to me, I did walk away less convinced that they would make a big move for a receiver and more convinced that maybe they try to start a cornerback run as opposed to, I think it was Jonathan Jones of CBS. I thought a really realistic mock where no cornerbacks were off the board until pick 15 and then Terrion and Kenyon go 15 and 16. And the Jags, if they want to get a starting corner in the first round, basically have to take one at 17, you know, move back, cornerback run still happens. So they ended up taking Kool-Aid McKinstry, but end of my ramble. Back to my original question.
So I think I definitely walked away also less convinced that they were going to make a trade up. I think at this point I'm pretty firm in a stance that if there's a trade that happens, I think it's more likely there will be a trade back than a trade up. Because like trading up for a cornerback confuses me a little bit, especially with like the Baalke quote that you just said. Like, I feel like there's like a first tier, or there's like really just like two tiers, or just like not that much separation between the cornerbacks in this class. And so yeah. I feel like there's not much of a difference between like cornerback one and cornerback three. And so like in that scenario that you just had for Jonathan Jones's mock, like I think they should be fine just like sitting back and taking the third corner as opposed to like being nervous about that situation and then moving up with like the Broncos or the Raiders at 12 or 13 to make sure that they get their guy. Cause like, I just don't think there's a cornerback in this class that warrants that type of move. There's no Sauce Gardner, as we've said, there's no Derek Stingley.
Because what trade up the 12 would require probably at least a number 96 overall pick, right?
Yeah. Honestly, the way I took it is that like, if the Falcons take Arnold at 8 and then like the Vikings end up not taking a quarterback and they take Quinion Mitchell, or like Quinion Mitchell goes 11 through 13-ish, then maybe they trade it back, trade up, because they're like, okay, we've got like our third guy, and then there's a pretty big tier drop-off for us. Yeah. So I almost think that that's more likely, is that they're trading up for like the bottom of the tier as opposed to for the top of the tier.
I'm with you. I think like, just like in the hypothetical, say it takes 17 and 96 to move up to 12 and select Kenyon Mitchell, or you stay at 17, pick Cooley McKinstry and a player in the third round. I think the second scenario is better. Just because in terms of the draft, I don't think there's any degree of confidence that you should have that much in player A being better than player B. You know what I mean? Unless obviously you're talking about like Caleb Williams versus like a, you know, undrafted free agent quarterback. That's obviously a completely different scenario. But just when you have two guys closely, I think everything says that you shouldn't have that supreme level of confidence. And that's normally how a lot of teams kind of screw themselves, is being positive in their evaluation ability, when a lot of times their evaluation ability has basically nothing, you know, to do with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if we had actually like clarified the tweet that you had about Balky and analytics, but yeah, the reason that analytics people say don't trade up is just that like the draft is so hard to predict. It's basically crapshoot. So you might as well take as many swings of the bat as possible. And so that's why three and a third rounder makes more sense than whoever your favorite corner prospect is.
Yeah, I and for the record, I think they're right. Like, obviously, there are trade-ups that have worked out in the past. You know, Julio Jones, great move. Trent McDuffie, yeah. Patrick Mahomes, you know, there's probably been several quarterbacks, even though it's a well-known that, you know, trading up for a quarterback is different than trading up for any other position. And if you trade up, if it's like a pick swap, you know, you can get better value out of that. So it's not like a blanket statement saying all trade-ups are bad. It's just, if you're playing the odds more often than not, you're better off not making, you know, the move up like that.
Yeah.
I personally agree with it. I know it's fun. Like, you know, like Malik Nabers go Zoom. Like, I know it's very enticing. It's just my personal opinion. I agree with the analysts. I say they shouldn't trade up, but it'd be interesting if they traded up like number 12 or number 13 and took Terrion Arnold and started the cornerback run. As much as I've been hammering the they need to take a cornerback early, I'd probably have a pretty mixed review on it from my point of view.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, because it's all about like the process with the draft. I mean, with most things, but especially the draft, it's like,
yeah,
you got to try to figure out like less so whether or not you personally like Terrion Arnold, but just about like the way they went about getting him.
And it's different if they were actually picking at 12 instead of having to move up for one. You know, like it's different deciding between player A and player B when you're not giving up resources to do it. But giving up resources to be able to make that choice just normally isn't, you know, the right call.
Yeah. I do think on like the flip scenario, if they end up trading back, I feel like a wide receiver or an offensive lineman would make sense. Because I think that scenario is that they get to pick 17 and there's either been zero or one cornerbacks off the board, and they have like two or three or four corners that they still really like. And so they're like, all right, someone come trade up for Brian Thomas or Xavier Worthy or Donnie Mitchell or, I don't know, Troy Fautanu or Alu or any like Guyton. There's a ton of like offensive line prospects that I feel like there's going to be a run in the middle of the first round. And so like the Bills and the Chiefs are both obviously like candidates trade up for a receiver. I was trying to think of offensive line candidates. I know there was a report today that the Commanders really want to trade up for an offensive lineman. So maybe look out for a Commanders trade. But yeah, I just think that trading back in general is probably going to be more likely than trading up, not just because like the analytics say that you should trade down as opposed to trading up if you're going to do one, but also just like with the way that I expect the board to fall, like where I think there's probably a better chance that zero or one corners go off the board by pick 17 than 2 to 3.
Here's a couple teams just picking after them. I could see trading up for an offensive lineman. Pittsburgh at 20. Miami at 21.
Cowboys.
Cowboys. I think you could put, honestly, I think you could even maybe put the Eagles in there at 22.
I think they're probably taking whoever the best corner is. Yeah, Green Bay? You definitely can't rule it out. Green Bay, I think, will probably take a lineman.
So I
picks too. Green Bay, I feel like Green Bay makes a lot of sense.
And it seems like people are like actually actively against the idea of trading back when, like, the way you just described it, I think it'd be an ideal scenario. And it's funny, like, so many people hate last year's draft class and say, oh, they shouldn't make a lot of picks because of last year's draft class. I have no personal take on that. But just like looking at it, you know, objectively down the middle, trading back worked out pretty good for them last year. You know what I mean? They got Anton Harrison and Antonio Johnson for trading back. I mean, if my memory serves correctly, I think Parker Washington was another, you know, pick. I could be wrong there. But either way, they got some, you know, decent players and move backs. So it's just interesting to me that so many people hate it when it was pretty good last year. You know, it worked out for them.
Yeah, it worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
The first round where you could, like, really recoup stuff. Like, I feel like because they traded back in the second round too, right? And everyone was like, come, Balky, what are you doing? Calm down, man. And so, like, that one is, like, still fine and still, like, it probably got plus value out of the trade. But I don't know. I think it's, like, the farther along you go in the draft, like,
yeah,
the more you might as well just stay your position because you're only going to get back, like, a sixth rounder as opposed to a fourth or fifth.
Yeah, and that's fair. All right. Next takeaway. Did what he say about the offensive line mean anything to you at all? Saying that he thought you could find starters in like the fourth and fifth round?
Not really, because I feel like he said the same thing about the cornerback class and the wide receiver class.
Sure. Every position is like, good.
Yeah, and like he's right in that like all three classes are really good and really deep and have guys in the middle. But like I feel like he had like almost the same response with different words for each position group. And so like I'm sure if you have a takeaway from it, I'll probably agree with it, but it's more so just that like I agree with what you're saying than like because it's you took it away from the presser yesterday specifically.
No, because you're right. He basically said the exact same thing about wide receivers. And yeah, and you know, you said how the big three were obviously good players and you know, hot take.
Yeah.
Ooh. Jaguars general manager Balky thinks Roman Dunes, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison are good at football. I feel like if you ask all really three, good, even. Yeah, fair enough. So I did a mock a couple days ago where I gave in to the fan pressure and looked up a scenario of what moving up for a receiver would look like. I gave up the 48th pick and a future six to move up to 9 to select Nabers. One, it wasn't at all me like predicting something like that would happen. Maybe I should have made that a little bit more clear. I saw like Sportsnet or something said it was like report Jaguars looking to move up from Malik Nabers. I was like, that's not correct. But
that's not your fault. They just do that with everything.
Yeah. But the one thing I did include in there that I do think, you know, could qualify is that, you know, they're really high on Malik Nabers. I in terms of really high, I think from what I know and what I've heard, they probably think he's one of the best, like, individual players in the draft class. Now, that doesn't at all mean that they will move up for him. But if a guy was to fall, I think he's the guy they would probably hope, you know, to prefer to fall, which, honestly, I mean, makes sense. I mean, look at, you know, what they lost in Calvin Ridley, for one. I feel like Malik Nabers could perfectly, you know, replace some of that. Obviously, he's not the route runner Calvin Ridley is, but just some of the movement ability, the way that you can get him open with free releases and moving him around the formation, his overall athletic ability. Obviously, Balky is a big, you know, traits guy. And then, ultimately, I think that they could see him as somebody who could mesh with the guys they currently have. Like, Gabe Davis makes sense as an X who basically just does the perimeter stuff like Calvin Ridley kind of got pigeonholed into last year. Like, I feel like he could reasonably take over for, like, Zay Jones, whereas Marvin Harrison Jr. and Romo Odunze are more like those guys. You just put an X and you set it and forget it. You know, I think
they're
all kind of different. So I don't think they're going to move up for him, but I do think, like, if they wanted a receiver to fall, I think it would probably be him.
Your scoop is perfect because it confirmed our priors. Like, I feel like we've said maybe multiple times, but definitely at least once, that even if we disagree or people might disagree about whether Rome or Malik is the wide receiver two in the class, like, we both said that Malik seems more like the Jaguars type, especially for, like, just like the way the current offense is constructed. But I even think in general, like, just like go fast downfield and Trevor's big arm can get it to you. And then, like, I feel like Balky usually likes, like, big physical traits. Like, we've talked about how he likes to win off the bus, but, like, I mean, physical traits with neighbors are pretty special. So yeah, I'm definitely was not surprised, but happy to see that report.
Yeah. And especially after yesterday, I don't think, like, that neighbors will end up a Jaguar. Like, I think I said the other day, my official prediction right now is Kool-Aid McKinstry at number 17. But, I mean, somebody asked me, it, like, on Twitter, they said, you know, you're one of the first people on Anton, which I put Anton in a few mock drafts of them. But for the record, I also, in my final mock draft, gave them Osiris Torrance, which was way off. So I will take no credit. Let it be known. And I love taking credit for things I don't deserve credit for, but I will take no credit for being first on Anton. But I will say, in terms of just who I think the pick will be, this is probably the least confident I've been. But I think part of that is because they've had a number one overall pick twice. Yeah. For one. And now they're picking in the middle. Like, when they were picking late first last year, it was kind of obvious it was going to be an offensive lineman. So that was easier because that was the range. It looked like the offensive linemen were going to go.
Yeah, now, he got suspended the week before.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's different, you know. Like, they're in the middle of the first. I'm really not confident in my overall prediction. But right now, I think they take Kool-Aid McKinstry. Whether that's at 17 or elsewhere, I don't know. But he's who I think will walk away as a Jaguar. We'll see if that changes between now and Thursday.
I think that's the best prediction to have, because you and I both did mock drafts, like, site by site for our respective websites, and we both had the option of taking, like, the first cornerback off the board, and I took Tarion Arnold and you took Quinion Mitchell. So I feel like that'd be a fun thing to debate on next week's, like, pre-draft show. But I agree with you where I think Kool-Aid is, like, officially, like, the best prediction to have, just because Tarion and Quinion are, like, I feel like inarguably cornerback one and two. Like, I mean, you can flip it depending on who you like more, but I think the common consensus is that those are the top two, and there's I don't know who the Jaguars would like more. I'm inclined to think it's Arnold, but I don't actually know. But, like, there's a very real chance that one or both of them is off the board before 17, and I would be a little surprised if McKinstry was off the board before 17, but he just, like, fits exactly what they want. Like, he can play press from day one and obviously fill their biggest roster need. And then, like, it's a big deal coming from Alabama, even if they haven't won a national title recently, like, in the past 3 years or whatever. It's so important to come from, like, a school like that, because that was one thing Balky said yesterday, was, like, they're really looking for people with championship pedigree. Like, we saw that in free agency with signing. I mean, not that the Bills have won a championship, but they've had some playoff experience between Mitch Morse and Abe Davis. And then, obviously, I guess the Niners didn't win a Super Bowl either, but then gained the playoff experience with Arik Armstead. And so, yeah, I think getting someone from, like, a school like Alabama really matters. And so, yeah, I'm with you that Tarion is, like, the best realistic mock.
Just because you mentioned the 49ers, before I get back on track, when I tweeted the analytics quote yesterday, somebody retweeted it, like, San Francisco guy was like, I don't think the analytics people would have told you to take Solomon Thomas over Patrick Mahomes. Which Jim Balky didn't do. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. I corrected him and said that, and he was like, oh, damn. He deletes it and makes another one. I think the analytics people would have told you not to take players with ACL injuries. He went back to the well. Damn. Like, I felt bad because Balky said something I completely agreed with. And I felt like I'm getting it from everywhere, man. It was crazy. So, to your point about the cornerbacks, I have a tidbit and a nugget to give still on the show. Yeah, exactly. A tidbit and a nugget. But that will be right after this break. So hang with us and we'll be right back. All right, we're back. I'll start off with a tidbit. We'll save the nugget for in a few minutes. All right, the tidbit is, I kind of tweeted this, but to your point about Kool-Aid being, you know, maybe the most, like, probable option just based on Kenyon and Tarion might go a little bit before that. From conversations I've had with people, you know, out there in the draft sphere, you know, people involved in processes, there's a pretty strong belief that Arnold goes before 17 and that Kenyon and that not Kenyon Kool-Aid's range is from the Jaguars to the Eagles. So it seems like a lot of people expect Kool-Aid to be a top 22 pick and for Tarion to go before 17. That is, it's like from conversations I've had, a widely held belief by some people. Maybe that doesn't happen because the draft is obviously super unpredictable. If you make a prediction about the draft, 9 times out of 10, you're going to look like an idiot. But just the vibes right now, it seems like people would project for the most expected guy to be at 17 would be Kool-Aid over Tarion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just of the two Alabama guys, at least.
Yeah, because I mean, it sure seems like Tarion is going to be the first or second corner off the board. So it's really about where that cornerback run starts. And you know, maybe Atlanta takes one. I don't think they do, but I think they're going edge or maybe even Byron Murphy.
Wow.
Yeah, it seems like they're smoking cool.
I don't know. Yeah, Dallas Turner has been mocked at them forever, but I feel like they'll trade back. I feel like the Colts are a big corner team. Like Chris,
yeah.
I think today, like just talking well about all the young corners that they have, but man, they're young and inexperienced. And like, I feel like mostly day three guys. So it definitely makes sense to like either pick a corner before Jacksonville, obviously, since they have the 15th pick, but even to move up and make sure they get their own guy.
Yeah. And then Raiders are a potential option depending on, I don't know, if they don't take quarterback. I still think offensive line would make a lot of sense for them, but maybe they could take a corner. Who the hell knows what Denver, you know, will do, et cetera. It just seems like there's a chance that the Jaguars might be picking corner two or corner three, and that Tarion is, I don't know. I kind of expect Tarion to be the first corner off the board, honestly, over Kenyon.
Yeah, Quinion, it's like it's pretty tough to beat the non-Power 5 conference.
Yeah.
Allegations.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to be Khalil Mack in order to, like, pay off.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to our next nugget. Okay.
Okay.
Another big news to come out of Jacksonville lately has been the hiring of Tom Gamble. Trent Baalke said he is a senior personnel exec, something like that. Senior personnel guy. You know, he's high up in the front office. This is his third different time working with Baalke. He worked with him with the 49ers. He worked with him in 2021 before leaving to become director of player personnel for Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines for the 2022-2023 seasons. And now he's back, second time with Jax, third time. Yeah. So from the conversations I've had, and I've had a few different ones, it seems like maybe not the most like permanent long-term like guy to be in the front office for years and years, but I'll obviously be a big help this offseason. But I will say, Tom Gamble had options, you know, after Jim Harbaugh left, you know, Michigan. There's a – seems like a very real thing that he could have easily followed Harbaugh to Los Angeles. But it's a different dynamic there because they obviously have Ian Horwitz as GM, who he's never worked for. Maybe he just wants to answer to Harbaugh instead of him. There's a very real belief that he had an offer from the Chargers to follow Harbaugh, and he chose the Jaguars instead. And why that's interesting is – he was actually, you know, one of the final candidates to be general manager in 2013, you know, when Dave Caldwell took the job. So the fact that he's known the cons for basically that long, it seems like he's an interesting guy to have, you know, in the front office. And the fact that he chose the Jaguars, it seems like over the Chargers, seems like it's a place that he wants to be. So I've always heard positive things about him. So I think that's probably a positive addition to the front office. I mean, between him and Ethan Wall, it seems like Balky has, you know, guys in place that he can lean on, guys he's had history with, who
the big
no Jags GM has really had in a minute, you know, like what Caldwell had, the Polian guy.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
Bill Polian's kid. And I think that was his only like real lieutenant, and like John Idzik. So this seems like a better, you know, setup. But
yeah,
you know, moral of the story is it seems like he prefers this setup to Los Angeles's.
Yeah, I feel like the only thing I really remember about Tom Gamble is just like when the report came out that he was leaving the Jaguars to go to Michigan, there was a couple people, maybe you included, that were like, oh man, that's actually kind of a loss for the Jaguars just because he's good at what he does. And so like when I saw that he was coming back, I was like, okay, that's objectively a win. And it was funny hearing at the press conference, trying to figure out from the media like how long he's actually been around the building. It's been since February, is that right?
Yeah, Trent said I believe February, and like after the national championship.
True All right, I was gonna say my take of the episode is that the Jags are going to draft a Michigan guy on day two, because I already talked about like the whole championship pedigree thing. And so now that they've got someone who's working at Michigan, just come back. I feel like you got to include at least one Michigan kid in your mock drafts.
Yeah. And it's been a good bit that they haven't drafted like one this entire like time. There's obviously a few different who makes sense this year. I thought it was interesting. They noted how, you know, he's obviously been a part of the college scene for the last 2 years. So have a lot of their coaches that they hired, you know, on defense, you know, yeah, secondary, defensive line, linebacker. I think, not to say that's like a huge edge, but I think it's like a at least something useful, you know, entering the draft process, the knowledge that they have on some of the guys coming out, some of the connections that they have to the college game and the guys who coach these guys. I think it's not a huge thing, but I think it's not nothing.
Yeah, no, I was going to say it's worth mentioning. So it's not nothing. I agree with you.
Yeah, so I think the Tom Gamble union makes, you know, all the sense in the world for the Jaguars. And definitely seems like they have the front office more solidified just in terms of, like I said, stability and lieutenants. And it was Chris Polian I was thinking of. He was with Caldwell in Atlanta in 2012. And then it was the Jaguars director of pro personnel through 2019. And he's been with the Commanders the last couple of years. So told you it was a pull in. So, et cetera. So moving on. The next, I think, thing to really take away, you know, from this draft cycle and yesterday's press conference was Trevor Lawrence. You know, Trevor talked on Tuesday, and it wasn't a groundbreaking revelation when he said that there's been conversations with the Jaguars about a contract extension. He downplayed it, I thought, you know, saying how he's not really worried, you know, or not worried, he's not really focused on it right now, which makes sense. I mean, players with their agents, you know, handle that thing. They don't really need to focus on it until it's, you know, really time to. And as he even said, you know, his contract's technically not even up because it seems obvious a fifth year would be there in place. It was also funny that nobody asked Trent about fifth year for ETN yesterday. And I'm included in that nobody. I didn't realize it until I got home. But with that said, not a huge revelation from Lawrence. The Jaguars have basically been saying for 2 years they're going to extend Lawrence. Doug Peterson went on a tour about it last offseason where he basically said it over and over and over. They said something about it at the combine. So it's been a very like real thing for some time. Obviously everybody's favorite insider, Pretty Ricky, had a tweet. I have a complete disdain for all, I don't want to say like obviously all aggregation accounts, you know, Dov, anybody Dov adjacent, I think is useless, but accounts who just like claim to have sources when like, it's very clear that no, you do not, you know, like, there's no need to say that you have them. And I think one of the worst things for sports social media the last couple of years is people running with sources and stuff. I mean, people had Legarius Sneed going like, it's a lock, the deal's done, going to the Colts, goes to a team in the same division otherwise. But Just looking at this guy's tweets from free agency,
he was on a heater. I feel like he's got to be like connected to a player agency or something, because like they were just all in a row.
It was impeccable. The only thing I saw him get wrong was he said Tyron Smith to the Chiefs, but he had Hollywood Brown to the Chiefs. He had the Ridley situation pretty perfectly.
Yeah, Curtis Samuel to the Bills.
There he was had Brian Burns trade.
Yeah, he did have that one.
It was pretty outrageous. So normally I'd say pay these things zero mind. I think it's absurd. I think you can probably pay this a few percentage points of mine. You know, maybe not 100,
it's
but
worth mentioning. It's not.
Yeah, exactly. So he obviously had a tweet that the Jags will make Trevor Lawrence the highest paid quarterback around the NFL draft. Yesterday, Trent Baalke, you know, was asked about it. And he said he's not going to force anything. He's going to let things play out like he did with Josh Allen, which was, I think, his victory lap for saying, like, the Josh Allen thing worked out.
Yeah.
And he said ownership and Doug Peterson were involved. Normally, I don't think you'd get ownership involved until things were getting pretty serious, you know, like, because obviously it's going to be the biggest contract handed out in franchise history for the second time in one offseason. But it's probably going to be one of the biggest in NFL history. So, obviously, you know, if Shad Khan's going to be investing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, in this guy's contract, he's going to be involved. I wouldn't imagine that happens until, like, the later stages, right? Like, you don't get the owner involved, like from day one when you're, you know, in the bargaining process. I wouldn't think that makes sense, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's like, here, like, let's go over these – finalized details, because we already talked about like what the structure might kind of sort of look like, but now that we've actually gotten things pretty close to being in place, like we need to just like get your sign off really. And so I'm with you. I feel like that was like the biggest hint that Baalke gave yesterday at the presser.
Unsolicited.
Yeah, exactly. So like I don't know, maybe Shad is being, it doesn't seem very Shad though to just like be involved with contract negotiations earlier. Like I feel like he would just show up and sign the dotted line more so.
I remember him saying a couple years ago when he like wanted to be more in the know of what's going on, like basically like who's getting paid, etc. Because I think previously he was like finding out with the rest of us, like with some guys, like we're getting extended, etc. But I'm not sure that means that like he's like right in there in the thick of every, you know, contract signing and stuff like that. So I'm definitely with you that I think it was a notable comment. I mean, it makes no sense that people would project him to not be among the highest paid quarterbacks, right? Like 55 to 60 million probably has to be the baseline, right? Like, okay, it's going to be a terrible day online. I'm telling you right now, Gus, if I break this pledge, I want you to publicly dismantle me, okay? I will not be involved with the discourse. I will only tweet and retweet the facts. Yeah, no, I won't do it. It's going to be terrible.
Oh, I'm stunned. Where did you go and who is this talking to me?
I can't do it, man. It's going to be bad. It's going to be real bad.
I know it is, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to defend 16 as he should be.
Yeah. You're going to go to the front lines. You're going to be in the trenches.
Yeah, I honestly should start doing some like film work now just to get it ready.
Fair enough.
As soon as I saw the Pretty Ricky tweet, I started like working on the draft for contract.
Yeah. It's going to be bad. Because here's the thing. Yeah, I probably agree that his production doesn't warrant highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Sure. I will not disagree with that. I don't think they would disagree. I don't think anybody would disagree with that.
Trevor wouldn't disagree.
Yeah. However, Stephen A. Yeah. It's literally how contracts work in the NFL, man. He'll be the highest paid quarterback for a cup of coffee. And the reason you make him the highest paid quarterback now is because at the end of the day, they're extending him. This is not a make or break season for him getting a contract extension. Trevor Lawrence has the Jaguars by, you know, like this. Like, he is getting extended. Trent Baalke is not going to be the general manager that let Trevor Lawrence lead the Jaguars. If you wanted to start the discussion, you have to ask, okay, who's going to be the quarterback then? So Trevor Lawrence isn't going anywhere. So you either make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks now, or you do it a year from now when guys like Dak Prescott, Tua, and Brock Purdy, you know, are paid. Yeah, I said it.
That one got me a good one.
Brock's eligible after the season. If you don't pay Trevor, you know, before then, maybe Brock gets paid before then. Brock probably going to be 60-something million guy.
Yeah,
it's just how it works.
Yeah.
It's just how it works.
Now, we've gone over this before, and we're going to have to go over it again, like, once the deal does happen. Even if you're not participating in the online discourse, we're going to have to get on a pod, obviously, to talk about it. But, yeah, it's just, like, you get what the last guy got plus a dollar.
Cap's going up.
That's just how it works. Like, yeah, it doesn't really matter, as you were saying, like, what you think about his pass production, even if you don't think, like, production aside, just, like, that he's on a similar playing level to, like, guys like Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert and Jalen Hurts. But first of all, you'd be wrong. And second of all, even if you do think that, like, it's just the way it works is with these contract extensions, is that if he's even close to being in that tier, which he's, like, everyone should say that he's closer to being in that tier than to, like, Daniel Jones or to Baker Mayfield. Yeah. And so, like, it's like those are the two tiers. You're either getting a Baker Mayfield contract or you're getting the Joe Burrow contract, and he's going to get the Joe Burrow contract.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like people understand this with every other position but quarterback. Yeah, like, people can grasp this with everybody else but the quarterback position. It's good stuff, really. So the Jaguars definitely didn't make it seem like yesterday, like, it's far away, right? Like, I would say probably before training camp at the latest at this point, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. I think that's usually just, like, the general off deadline for quarterback extensions, just because they want to wrap it up before the player hits the practice fields. And so I would say I'm, like, 90% sure it's going to happen before training camp.
$500 million or
no? No, but I think he's going to get, like, just, like, the biggest. I think what's going to happen is that when the reported numbers come out, it's going to look like a dollar more than Burrow's, and it'll be like, okay, he barely tops Burrow. But then when the reported numbers come out, I think it'll be like Josh Allen, because, like, Josh Allen had pretty much the same contract as Brian Burns on paper. But then when you actually look at, like, the guarantees and the prorated bonuses and all this stuff, then it's a much healthier contract, and he's expected to actually take home more money than Brian Burns. So I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be the same way, where, like, it looks on paper like just barely above Burrow, but I think it could be, like, in reality way more than Burrow got. So last week we set the over under at 265.5 million. You were taking the under, and you just asked me 500 million.
I took the under.
Yeah.
Reverse.
I know. I made sure to go back and find the number, because I was going to ask if you wanted to change your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been ball. Yeah. Yeah. You kicked my ass. Yeah. Protect. That shows you how merry I am most of these days. If I'm not going on a tangent about it, I probably don't care enough. Because I don't even remember having a conversation.
I know. We were going back and forth about 255, 265, 265.
Yeah. I'm an idiot. He's going to get more Burrow. I don't know what kind of trance I was under. But, yeah, I played a Uno reverse card. You got me. You got me cornered, Gus.
Whether it happens before or after the draft doesn't matter too much. But, I mean, obviously having it happen this offseason is huge. And then, like, the biggest reason is, like you said, where, like, he's not going anywhere. And so, like, if you're going to sign him to a massive
project, you're going to pay him
next year. But then also just on top of it, like, I feel like you get so much more roster flexibility if you do sign him onto the books now versus next year. Because then, like, if he's not signed going into the 2025 offseason, and then neither is Cam Robinson or Walker Little or Tyson Campbell, like, holy cow, you got a lot of work to do. And then we saw
it's like what happened this year with Josh Allen and Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, and then, like, they weren't able to get Josh Allen and Calvin Ridley done in time. And so, like, I think that it will happen this offseason, but it's for a lot of different reasons, it's important that it does.
Yeah, I'm with you. Can I say, though, that for as much respect for I have for his predictions, it was pretty ricky. He did piss me off early yesterday.
What did he do to you, John?
He stoked the Brandon Ayuk flames again. I can't make it go away, Gus. I've tried peeing on the fire. I've tried throwing water on the fire, and nothing. It just keeps on burning.
You're talking about Jacksonville specifically, because I feel like at this point, like, Ayuk is going to get traded.
Yeah, no. Didn't he have a tweet where he said, like, they had interest in trading for Brandon Ayuk? I'm pretty positive he did.
Yeah, he said, like,
Jaguar specifically.
And then he said, like, Oh, by the way, the Jaguars also have a little bit of interest in Ayuk. They're just trying to get the Lawrence deal done first.
Yeah.
And so I think – so maybe if Lawrence deal gets done before the draft, the odds of an Ayuk trade happening go up a little bit. But I think it's pretty marginal. I think it's like it goes from like a 2% chance to a 3% chance, right?
Here's my thing. How many teams have an interest in trading for Brandon Ayuk? Probably more than a couple, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the teams outside their division because of
interdivisional trades. That's what I'm saying. Like, obviously, teams are – yeah, obviously the Jaguars would be interested in adding Brandon Ayuk to their roster. I'd be interested in getting a new truck tomorrow. You know, like, it would be – a very ideal scenario.
Yeah.
I'm planting my flag, Gus. I won't remember that. I won't forget this. Brandon Ayuk will not be a Jacksonville Jaguar.
Okay.
Yeah. Taking that stance. If he is, we can clip this. We can run it for eternity. But I wanted to go away, Gus. I do not think there's a chance that Brandon Ayuk. I think even the same account said the teams who are in the primary running and Jacksonville wasn't included.
Yeah. No. It was, I think, the Giants, the Patriots.
And Washington.
In Washington. Yeah. And then, like, later on, I feel like it was just, like, after Jags fans were bickering at him, like, what about the Jags? What about the Jags? He was like, oh, yeah, I guess they have technically made one call to offer their third rounder. I don't know, John. I'm pretty excited for when Ayuk trade goes down and then they draft a Michigan guy on day two.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting watching – Malik Nabers and Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins in the fall. That's
looking forward to it.
That's where I'm at with Jackson Powers Johnson snapping that thing back.
Which one would you be more mad at? An Ayuk trade happening or Powers Johnson being the pick at 17th overall?
Still the second one.
That's what I thought.
It pissed me off so much.
No, I would like, I've like, trying to like stay away from the JPJ like Jags discourse, but it would make me mad too.
God, we really haven't seen it. It's been about a month now. God, that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. That's good stuff. It okay. So for reference, I don't respect the anonymous scouts in the Bob McGinn articles. I think most of the time you can read what they're saying. And if you watch the player, you can be like, okay, what the hell are these guys watching?
Yeah, I that's objectively wrong.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should ever hold scouts up on a mantle. I think for the most part, they're very self-important pearl clutchers who like the smell of their own farts. However, the JPJ stuff in the McGinn article made me laugh.
So I saved the article, but then I just haven't gone around to it. So lay it on me. What do you say?
They basically called him like a head case and said he wasn't like a typical offensive line mentality. And some ridiculous comment about it. He said he's the boy who cries wolf because he'll get injured, get carted off, and then come back 10 plays later. And I'm like, this is completely ridiculous. like, okay, one – it's self-serving because I hated that pick too. It's some of the most ridiculous content I've ever seen posted. Yeah. Like, come on, dude.
It is funny that they like say like
in the same breath.
Because I feel
in
like
in the same breath they said he was a Pro Bowl ready-made center. Another
thing. Go ahead. Why are we doing this? It's literally for clicks. It's so annoying.
My bad for cutting you off.
No, you're good. I don't know what I was gonna say, but. Ah, can we just get to Thursday?
Yeah. It's just the anonymous scout stuff. The draft every point is terrible. And the AD Mitchell stuff. Did you see that one?
Well, no. Like from the same go long thing.
Yeah. From Bob McGinn. No, it's basically somebody like saying like he was hard to like basically coach. Because he's diabetic and sometimes like he had mood swings because of it. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works.
What?
Yeah.
Print out that article and then light it on fire.
So yeah, it's that point in the season. Cause like you can go back. I think Brandon Thorne posted in that same series, a guy a few years ago said Penei Sewell like wasn't aggressive or physical like in the run game or something like that. I'm like,
come on, watch the games. Come on.
Yeah, you know. So just important to remember this time of year, whatever you see anonymous quotes from scouts and stuff, you don't have to take these scouts' words
God. It must be weird for like casual draft fans to like start paying attention a week before the draft, because that's just like when all the BS comes out. Like, it, if you're paying attention to everything that comes out in the week before the draft, like I feel like 80% of it is smokescreens compared to like 30 or 40% of it before the week before.
The GOAT said that it's all agent BS until like the night before. That's what Belichick said on, I think it was McAfee. Did not watch, but saw the clip on Twitter. So
I love Bill. I'll find that.
But he was loose, man. He was loose. He was ready to go.
All of the Lombardi trophies. That's incredible. And it was like the day that that ESPN article came out about it.
I was gonna say, maybe he saw the Kraft comments.
Basically. So yeah, that was king behavior.
Yeah. So I mean, Bill says it. I mean, he's been around in, like, more drafts than, like, I've been alive for. It's, you know, probably right. So I'd probably just say advise that most stuff you hear between now and probably, like, Wednesday night is probably, like, BS.
Unless it's from us.
Exactly. We serve no BS here. As long as I remember the conversation.
Hey, that's what the Notes app is for, to
exactly.
Get the
time to, man. Exactly. Well, Gus. Is there anything we missed from the press or any other important things to hit? I thought it was a ho-hum day. You know, nothing groundbreaking, but at least a little
informative. Got the juices flowing a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite press conferences every year. I'll say that. I love the pre-draft press conferences. I love them.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Even though I didn't go to this one or the one last year, it's been now like a whole calendar year that I've been working full-time on the beat or whatever. And so, like, I'd agree with you. Where the press conferences, their pre-draft press conference is the best one.
To show you the importance of them, we had, I think, 6 to 7 people at Trevor Lawrence and Foye Oluokun. And we had, like, probably, like, 25 to 30 plus yesterday. You know, obviously, when the general manager speaks, you know, people want to be there and listen. So, Gus, we're going to be back next week. We'll figure out the day. It'll be before the draft. We'll do a little dueling mock draft and also give our final takes on number 17 and beyond. But you got anything else for us, my friend?
Michigan kid is the day 2 lock. The day 3 lock is a linebacker. I would have already told you that, but Balky like was talking about how like more size is going to be, bless you, more size is going to be more better for the kickoff, for the new kickoff rules, because since players are like lining up so close to each other and don't have as far to run, like it's going to be more like big bodies, like even offensive and defensive linemen along with linebackers, as opposed to, I don't know, linebackers and safeties or something. Bless you, Lordy. So yeah, day 3 linebacker, put that one in your mocks alongside a Michigan jabroni.
I get allergies. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. Colin wasn't too bad until like a day or two ago, and then it's shot back up again.
Can you give me a name for the Michigan day 2 guy? If it's Blake Corum, I wouldn't be.
That'd be funny. If they draft a running back, I'm praying it would be Audric Esteem from Notre Dame. But it would be pretty funny if they got the Urban kid from Oregon, because he just looks like a better Tank Bigsby than me.
Dane Brugler mocked them, the Louisville running back, which I thought was perfect. His little spark plug.
Yeah. I could see them getting a little scat back. I feel like Doug likes his little scat backs back in Philadelphia between like Boston Scott and –
Do you need more than one power guy?
Do you what now?
Like, do you need more than one power guy, really?
No. Especially for, like, it's a running back room. There's going to be, like, 2 or 3 guys and special teams. So I would say for the Michigan kid, Chris Jenkins would probably be, like, the guy that put it at the top. I feel like his, like, best landing spot would be in between picks 48 and 96. Why are you shaking your head? Not a big Chris Jenkins guy?
That was, like, mid.
I don't know. I think he would be – like, I was gearing up to say he'd be a better third-round pick than a second-round pick. Like, I think it would be a little bit mid if he was a second-rounder. But, like, in the third-rounder, I think he's
– Yeah, in the third-round, I think it'd be a fine pick. I'd give it a C-.
You know what I would give a C- is the slot cornerback from Michigan, Mike S., whatever his last name is. I'm not even going to try to say it. But, like
– Why?
I like him, but, like, as, like, a fourth-rounder, like, a good Josiah Scott – or, like, maybe in the third, but, like, I've been seeing that he's going to be, like, an early second-round pick. I'm like
– I saw some report saying first round. I'm like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We're not there yet.
Yeah, I'm talking about value here, John. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Board breathe. That's what we're going off of.
I don't know. Chris Jenkins would be C minus, D plus, in my opinion. I feel like it's hitting a single at 48. Maybe you can steal second.
Wilson would. Now that we're saying all these Michigan guys, like, they aren't really great fits because Roman Wilson is like
Christian Kirk.
Pure slot only, like even more of a slot only than Christian Kirk is. So that doesn't make sense.
Chris Jenkins is the best fit, and he might honestly be the favorite to be the pick at 48 because I'm pretty sure defensive line falls off pretty hard after round two this year. Like,
yeah,
you have some guys like Dorless and LSU guys, but that's about it.
I don't know if I'm going to end up doing a final mock. We'll definitely have one on Big Cat, but I might have someone else do it. But if I were doing one, I would definitely.
Come on.
I'll do one.
Thank you.
Now, if I were like doing it in 5 minutes, it would definitely be corner round one, defensive line round two would be like what I'm looking.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Okay.
Last thing. I know I've tried to exit us a few times. Last thing. You've done a great job tracking the top 30 visits.
I'm just reading tweets, man.
Yeah. Somebody asked you and I both, like, it was interesting that they have Kool-Aid and Arnold and Nate Wiggins in, but not, you know, Mitchell or Cooper the Gene. Does that mean anything? From looking, like, so there were no top 30 visits in 2021. Everything was still virtual. Obviously not 2020. So Trent Baalke's only been able to have them the last two drafts. It's been 19 picks. He's drafted four guys off the top 30 list. You know, it's been Trayvon Walker, Chad Muma, Tyler Lacy, and Cooper Hodges. That's one of their three first-round picks, two of their seven top 100 picks, and four out of 19 overall. It means something different for every GM, but it truly like looks like there's like no trend with them. Like, they'll probably draft at least one guy off their top 30 list, but otherwise – it seems like there's no like trend or rhyme or reason, because there's a million reasons like you could want to bring a guy in, you know, like you're trying, like the draft is completing a puzzle. You're trying to get as much information as possible. Sometimes you need more information from some guys than others, you know? So
yeah, it could be medical. It's going to be like, you know, effort level on a certain play. It could be exactly what the coaches were asking you to do. It could be just so many different things.
Exactly. So I truly believe that when it comes to the Jaguars in this front office, there is no trend for top 30 visits, and I would just probably ignore them in terms of importance.
So what I do is that, like, I have the top 30 visits all listed, but I've been tracking like every single visit.
For sure.
Combine visits, even like informal combine visits, local days, the Orange Juice Bowl, like all this stuff. That's definitely not
so the bowl the Gators are in?
The bowl and all the other ones. And so, like, I think it's – you definitely shouldn't look at it and be like, ooh, they brought in Kool-Aid McKinstry on a top 30 visit. That means they're interested in him. You definitely can't do it like on a name-by-name basis because like they're just trying to collect more information. We don't know what kind of information they're trying to collect.
Yeah.
But what I try to do is just look at it positionally. So I'm like, okay, they've visited a lot of cornerbacks, which like obviously cornerback is one of their biggest needs, but almost all of them are like round one and then round four type guys. And then like they visited a handful of defensive linemen and all of them feel like day two guys. And then like they visited a lot of receivers, but all of them feel like third round guys. And so like, I think you can, I would have to go back and look at last year's tracker to see like whether that actually ended up like making sense. Cause I know I was definitely tracking like just like the total amount of positions and stuff that they're looking at.
Yeah.
I think it's like more than anything, like a helpful tool for like mock drafts to be like, oh, like that's weird that they like have interviewed so many like fifth roundish linebackers. I'll make sure to include one in my mock. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think you're right, because I think there are definitely trends like that in the guys that they've looked at in terms of this year's, you know, visits. I will say, maybe I'm just hurt. I mocked Nolan Smith them a lot last year because they had like 9 or 10 edges in for a visit. So I thought it was a lock that they were going to take one fairly early, and then obviously they didn't. But I feel like, I don't know, it maybe has been a indicator for some like day three guys they have interest in, you know, like the Tyler Lacy's and the Cooper Hodges of the world.
Right.
That makes sense. And maybe guys who they visit with on multiple occasions, which is my whole point with calling it top 30 visits, because you only get 30 in-person ones, but you have pro day visits. You have Zoom visits. You have combine visits. There are all these different times they can meet with these players. Like Anton, you know, they talked about meeting with him at the combine last year. So it's just a lot of different moving pieces. So that's just my thoughts on it. You know, for fans asking, why haven't they brought in player X, Y, or Z? Why are they bringing in player whoever? I just think there's no way for anybody other than them to know the specific reasons why guys are brought in.
I got a question for you before. So I want to ask it now in case I forget to ask you next week. But what do you make of Tez Walker? Because he's had three different visits in this pre-draft process. And I don't know specifically off the top of my head, but I would assume it's like combine, pro day, top 30. And I went back and for between this year and last year, there hasn't been a prospect that's visited the Jaguars three times. There's been a handful of guys that like visited two times, but he's the first guy that's visited him three times. So it's like, I'm confused kind of, because I'm like, what information do they like still not have? Like, still trying to figure out.
Did they draft any of the two guys?
I would have to go back and look. Off the top of my head, I don't think so. Because I think they met with Anton at the combine, and then they met with Tank at some point. They didn't meet with Brenton Strange, but they met with like...
Had to throw people off that set.
I would say they met with like 6 to 7 people. Like Antonio Johnson, I'm pretty sure they met with 6 to 7 people. Not just top 30, but like throughout all of the pre-draft visits.
Yeah.
At least half of the class like met with them at some point.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with the Tez Walker thingy. Like, it has to be like an indication of interest, right? Like, I don't know why else like you're doing that, because he seems like
it's not like you're asking him about Drake May.
Yeah, and he seemed like seems like a guy maybe to do homework on, just because of the transfer and everything that went on with that, his Senior Bowl experience, some of that kind of stuff. If you look at it, Balky hasn't drafted many transfer players in Jacksonville. I think that some of the only ones are, I know Christian Braswell last year. There's not many more. I'm not going to count Jordan Smith. He left campus due to a credit card scam. Mm-hmm. So I had it down somewhere, because it was a theory I was running that I was like, okay, they've taken two. Jordan Smith and Christian Braswell, and I'm not going to count Jordan Smith.
Yeah,
that was kind of a forced transfer.
Braswell, I feel like was
that was a throwaway pick.
Yeah, and yeah, it was. So, I think he fell a little bit, so that was we cannot take this guy. It was almost like Antonio Johnson, but just more low key.
And for a record, I have nothing to compare that against any other GM, so I don't know if it's. What it means. I was just interested in seeing in the days of transfer portal how many guys they've taken or transferred in. It's not many, but Tez Walker is one of those guys. So I don't know. They like have every visit possible with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have no real opinion. Like I think he's like maybe a fourth round guy. I see people have him like in the third. I'm like not a huge fan of him, but I'm now rooting against the selection, because it will be hilarious if they don't draft him after having multiple chances at him that they spent all this time with him. It's like, what was the point?
Yeah. I can't even think of a single other North Carolina prospect. Are they going to ask him about Cedric Gray, the linebacker? I don't know. I'm really interested to see if he ends up a Jaguar or not. I think... I'm trying to figure out a take that involves Brandon Ayuk. Who's more likely to be a Jaguar between Tez Walker and him? I suppose Tez Walker. You're on mute.
Tweet out that poll. I would love to see.
Who's more likely to be a Jaguar?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
We'll open with the results next week.
Yeah. I know which vote I'm giving. All right. On that note, anything else, my friend?
No, I think that was a good little review. Yeah. Make sure to be prepared with plenty of hot takes next week.
All right, we'll be back next week for our final thoughts on pick 17 and beyond, plus a little mock draft of the first round. We did that last year. I might go back and see how right we were, how off we were.
Did we do like a full NFL mock?
Yeah, like a first round. I'm
pretty sure. I was going to say we should do that again, even just. because we're having fun and it doesn't pertain to the Jags, but we should have fun here.
With that said, thank you guys for listening to the 95th episode of the Jaguar Report. Who would have thought? Not me. Be back next week.
You just got buckyballed.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.